This podcast is a Tucker Media production. For more information, head to tuckermedia.com.au.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Media Mates podcast. My name's Ralph Tucker, and as I started last week, we're taking a bit of a different tack with the podcast over the next few weeks, chatting to members of the ABC Grandstand NRL team who I work with for a full season this year. So last week you heard from Dean Halitau, today it'll be Andrew Ryan, and in the coming weeks you'll hear from Matthew Elliott and Ruan Sims. Today's guest, Andrew Ryan, well, what can you say about him? A former premiership winning captain with Canterbury, he played for his state, he played for his country, and he's really starting to establish himself as a very impressive co-commentator and media performer. I really hope you enjoy this chat with Andrew Bobcat Ryan.
Andrew Ryan, welcome to the Media Mates podcast.
Thanks for having me, mate. Great to be here.
Like I did with Dean Halitau, I'm taking a different tack with what I normally do and going through the NRL team that I've worked with at ABC Grandstand, having a chat to them about how they've felt adapting to working in the media as opposed to playing. You've come up to your end of your third season. What's that been like for you to work as a caller, a co-commentator, and also a sideline eye?
Oh, look, mate, it's been really enjoyable to be around football, you know, to work in that ABC team. It's been fun, it's exciting, and almost weekly it surprises me the reach that ABC gets. You know, I run into people in Cairns, you run into people all over the place that, you know, down that have been working in mines, that tune in every week. So, yeah, it's been a really enjoyable time, and the thing that comes across the best through the ABC is that obviously you got guys that are really knowledgeable in there and really good at what they do, but the constant feedback I get is that they just love hearing people just talk about footy and not a lot of other crap that comes with it. You know, there's the footy and there's analysis, but it's fun as well.
When you were playing, did it ever come across your mind that perhaps pursuing a career in media might be a go? Like, I know there's a lot of players that become ex-players that toy with the idea, but at the end of the day, when you look at the amount of players that play in the NRL and the amount of jobs that are available, there's not that many. So was it something that was ever in the back of your mind while you were playing?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I do recall doing a couple of games while I was actually playing. I remember going down to Melbourne and just filling in and doing a game while I was playing just on a random weekend after we played a Friday night game. But if you ask me whether I thought it was going to be a career, there's no way. Even the amount of media, I guess, that I've been able to do since I retired, I definitely didn't think that was on the radar. If you'd asked me when I was playing, I probably thought I'd go into a business or possibly even coaching. I always had a bit of a dream, even as a player. I used to think that I loved that analysis and being around it, and always probably thought I'd love to go down that coaching path. But I've been fortunate to get a full-time job in the NRL in wellbeing and education post-footy, and which gives me the flexibility to be able to do a fair bit of media, plus it gives me the flexibility to do some coaching as well. So I guess looking at all of that, I've pretty much ticked in a lot of the boxes that I was looking for.
And when you look at the transition from being a player to getting involved in the media, what do you think has been the biggest challenge for you in terms of adapting to that role? Because obviously there'd still be players that you would have played with and against. You've been out of the game for a few years now, but there'd still be quite a few players around, or you'd know a lot of the players. How was that sort of adapting to, okay, you might have to be critical of their performance, or you might have to not be favourable in your comments to one of your mates?
Mm. Yeah, there's been a few challenges. I guess that is one of the ones where you've played with guys, you don't want to come out and sound like you're bagging guys, and probably the teams you've played for too. I probably look a bit harder on those, you know, in particular the Bulldogs where I finished up. I probably, you know, at some stage was probably a little bit harder on them. But probably the number one challenge for me would have been the early stages of going to interview guys post game, and not that I didn't feel comfortable doing it. It's just that I know what they're going through in that post game. you're tired, especially after a loss, you're frustrated. And I guess, as from that player's point of view, and especially after a big game, you know, to go and grab someone after and try and get that emotion when you know what they're going through, that was probably the biggest challenge for me.
What is it like in that moment, knowing that you have to talk to a player that, like you say, may be frustrated after a heavy defeat or a finals loss, and you know you have to ask them a question, and that's your job now. You've crossed that line to being that guy that was interviewed to the guy that's asking the question.
Yeah, the other complication that probably comes with it is my role in the wellbeing and education for the NRL is that I work with these guys and also trying to help their transition into life after footy for some of these guys. So I guess I take a lot of that in. But, yeah, you know, I know what those guys are going through, especially the semi-final losses and those ones. You know, you realise that there's an obligation as a player to talk to media and do that stuff post-game, and you probably realise that a bit later in your career when you get a bit more experience. But when you've been out on those fields and you know after a loss that you just want to crawl into a hole, I can see that on the guys' faces when you go and try and grab them from an interview. And, you know, a lot of them are respectful because you've been there before, but the last thing they want to do is have a chat to me.
Just having a look at what you do in terms of your media commitments, you do co-commentary, you also do sideline. How was that for you in terms of adjusting to both those roles? Okay, so you started off on the sideline. Actually, you probably started off co-commentary doing the stuff in Newcastle and then sideline with the main team and then co-commentary in the last sort of 12 months or so. What are the main differences for you?
Look, I love being the co-commentator because you get that. You get that real opportunity to be constantly analysing the game. I guess with the sideline comments, you do get, the guys come to you quite regularly, but you've got to be talking about something that's really relevant right at that moment, which might sound a little bit stupid, but as a sideline commentator, if you're talking about something that happened 2 or 3 minutes ago, it's pretty much gone from everyone's mind. Whereas when you're analysing the game as a co-commentator, you're just constantly on because you get that opportunity to jump in pretty much whenever you want. And in saying that, with working with Matt and Andrew as a sideline over the years, they've given me that confidence and the ability to jump in if I do see something as well. But in saying that, you don't want to step on their toes too often as well. That's why. But I really enjoyed the co-commentator sense because the excitement, the view that you get as well, I really like having. It's like the coach's eye where you're sitting up in the commentator's box because you're looking. That's the way I look at it. When I'm co-commentating, I look at it, the whole field. I'm analysing it like I would be as a coach.
The thing that Dean Halitower mentioned that was difficult for him to adjust to was the fact that he was third man in, as it were. So the commentator, through the natural ebb and flow of the game, gets to describe what's happening. The co-commentator gets to then jump in with his view. Dean was saying the hardest thing for him to come up with was something that was going to embellish what the other two guys had already said when describing the same set of circumstances within the game.
Yeah, it is a challenge, and especially when you're working with really experienced guys. You know, Andrew Moore, in my opinion's the best caller going around, and then you got Matty Elliott, who's been a coach for a long time and who's really, really knowledgeable in the game. I guess for me, I would try and come in from that little bit of a player's perspective or something that's a little bit different away from those guys, but also trying to all be on the same page as well, because at the end of the day, we're all saying the same stuff. So in a lot of ways, you want to sound like we're all on the same page in that sense, but have a bit of a different point of view from time to time.
And what's it like sitting on the sideline? That gives you another viewpoint as well, because you're right up close to the action. I sit next to you when you're doing that, and you can feel everything that the players are feeling, but without the contact.
Best case scenario for me. But yeah, you're right. You are so close. You're seeing the guys. You know, I love being down on the sideline when I see a guy making their debut. because you get that sense of what they're going through. It takes you back to me running onto an NRL field for the first time, especially when you're seeing the guys that are coming off the bench, because you can see their nervous energy. You can see them not sitting still on the sideline. They're just so excited to get out there. For me, that's my favourite moment as a sideline commentator, seeing someone make their debut, and then also getting the opportunity to speak to them post-game about what it means to them and their family, what they're going through, the emotions. That's been a real highlight for me.
The other component, I guess, is the pre-game shows that we do on a Saturday or on a Sunday or even a Thursday or Friday night, when there's an hour lead-in, when you have to provide analysis on what has happened during the week, and also adjust to talking to talkback callers who are never shy in having their opinion on certain issues in the game. Being a former player and a respected former player that's played for his state and his country, people are listening to what your opinions are. Was that also something that was difficult to sort of deal with?
Yeah, it is, because, look, as a player, and it was probably a bit of the environment I was in, Steve Folkes for a big chunk of my life, and even Brian Smith, you know, in the playing days as coaches of mine for extended periods, a lot of ours was not giving anything to the opposition. It was just fly under the radar, just play a straight bat, just, especially Steve Folkes, you know, it was like just do what you have to do. You know, there was no, I'd never come out with any outlandish statements or do anything beyond to bring any unwanted publicity to the club or your teammates. So it was different then to flip it into to try and have a bit of an opinion. The great thing I've loved about doing those types of shows is that even though we do prepare, you never know where it can take you. A caller might toss up something, and especially having probably, I guess, the extended periods when we've had Maddie and Andrew over the last few years, who knows what's going to happen in some of those shows, because it can be a call, it can be something that Maddie or myself occasionally just throws out. There could be a random comment. It just takes it to different tangents, and that's the thing I enjoy about it the most. You know, it's not going in with that super prepared, this is what we're going to talk about for 6 hours, because you just go on so many different little paths throughout the day.
Well, and that's the other thing. I mean, we sort of tried to steer it away from a traditional ABC, you know, analysis, you know, breakdown, play-by-play sort of scenario. We've sort of given you guys sort of free license to be serious when we need to discuss serious stuff, but take it from an entertainment point of view to different parts. And I guess that's what sort of we're looking at. If you sort of bring it back to a radio sort of discussion, we're looking for light and shade. So it's like serious, but also entertainment, because the last thing you want is you don't want to bore the listeners to death. So having that component to it, and having that, I guess, ability to sort of provide critical analysis when you need to, but also show a bit of your personality as well.
Yeah, spot on. And the greatest thing I think that has happened with what we've been able to do in that sense is that it does feel like there's just three of us sitting in a room, or four of us sitting in a room having a chat, and you forget that there's everyone else out there listening. But then when you speak to a lot of people that are listening, they feel like that it is just a few blokes sitting around having a yarn, and they're sort of having a laugh along with you, and that's what you want. You want those people that are driving in their cars or listening in their backyards to just really feel like, you know, they're doing their favourite thing at that moment in that day, whether it be out and about for sport or whether it be working in their yards. They're just in their element. That's what you want every listener to have.
Does it kind of freak you out when you get a text message from a former player or an ex-teammate or something that, you know, you might have thrown something out there candidly, but then somebody is like, you get immediate feedback.
Yeah,
which,
you do.
Which must be a bit weird.
The one that surprises me is probably how many coaches we've run into that have actually tuned in over time, you know, and that be former coaches as well. So, yeah, that made me a little bit nervous, to be honest, because I sometimes you're just throwing out whatever on your mind, but not that you need to worry about too much about what they're thinking, but yeah, even some current players that you've spoken to and just the reach that it has, you do forget how many people I guess do tune in, and I guess that's a really good thing that so many people get to access it.
Being a guy from the country, you would appreciate that style of thing, like in terms of the ABC would have been always on the radio for you as a kid growing up. Television probably only covered a few games until pay TV came in. So the radio was really the lifeblood of the country community, particularly involving sport. So that would have been something that I guess you would have grown up on, being raised in Dubbo.
Absolutely. I remember, your Saturdays and Sundays, whether it be driving around, whether it be just at home with the radio on the backyard, us playing touch footy and hearing the commentary going of the games. And even I recall some weekends, or quite a few of my weekends, sitting, I used to listen to the around the grounds, and I'd do my own updates on the pad with the pen there, lined out all the teams and listen to those updates. And then even Jeff Mann, who has been around Dubbo radio for years, then he'd come on the radio and he'd do the local Group 11 updates as well of what was happening all over from our area, what was happening in the local footy as well. So yeah, that does certainly take me back to my childhood.
You're also now currently doing some TV work for the World Cup with Channel 7. How's that been for you, and what's been the main differences between the radio calls that you've been doing over the last few years as opposed to what happens in TV?
It is. It's a really different space than radio. I guess fortunate for the watchers that my head doesn't get on this time round. So in that sense, it's a little bit like the radio, but it's really different to the radio in that they're constantly telling us to just peel back, just to rein it in, because obviously the pictures in a lot of ways take care of themselves, whereas in radio you're trying to paint that picture for people all the time. So you get so used to, well, obviously the main caller, like Andrew, doing play-by-play, and we're constantly talking, whereas in TV you just let the pictures and even the sounds that are coming through the ref's mic and stuff give those people an insight, where normally in radio land you're so used to painting that picture constantly.
Being able to have that, I guess, almost photographic memory for things that have happened on the field. I mean, we're fortunate at some venues where we have access to replays in a box. At other venues, you don't, and it can be a little bit difficult to see the big screen at times. So being able to recall in the lead-up to a try where seven or eight things may have happened, it's a real skill to be able to draw on your own memory of not only players that are on the attacking side but defensively as well, to spot things and then communicate them. Is that something that you've worked on over the years? It's just like, because it can be difficult, can't it?
Yeah, it is. It is a bit of a challenge. Probably the most challenging one this year was when we were in Bathurst and we were tucked away in a little corner, and Andrew was actually, he thought I was looking out at the screen at some stage because I was trying to recall what was going on, but I was just trying to stare and concentrate and remember what had happened. Like, and you obviously can't remember absolutely everything, but I guess trying to give him a bit of an insight, but where we were located in that box and the height we were at and how far the field was away without any TV, so replay, it did make things a little bit challenging. But yeah, it was funny. Andrew looked three or four times around the corner, like he thought I was looking at some TV. But that's our obligation, I guess, to try and recall to people what did unfold.
Now, as I did with Dean, I want to go through a few individuals, and I want to get your thoughts on the people that you work with. So if we start with Andrew Moore, we've sort of covered off on him a little bit throughout this chat so far, but what are the main things that you think about when you think about Andrew Moore?
Look, he's a quality, experienced caller, but there's nothing pleases me more than when Andrew, myself and Matt get the opportunity to work together, because I can just see the fear in his eyes and what might unfold on that day, the quirky behaviour. So, and look, he wants things done well. He's a perfectionist. So I think sometimes he could potentially get a bit frustrated with the way Matt and I do our things. But, yeah, it's always good times.
And what's that like working with somebody who you've obviously heard over the years? You've probably been interviewed countless times to then be seated alongside him in a commentary box, or seated alongside him in a pre-game show, or working as part of the unit with Matt on the sideline. What's that like, just going from that, I guess, listener point of view to actually being involved in a call with somebody that's sort of done it for the last 25, 30 years?
Probably the highlight for me was the last couple of years when we've gone out and done the country grand finals, and just to see, you know, a guy that's never met any of these players, never seen any of these players, to go through a program and then see them for the first time take the field, and then to be able to call those games, it's phenomenal. It's honestly, it's phenomenal. And to hardly make a mistake throughout that 80-minute grand final of guys that he's never seen play before and never seen in his life, it's probably been one of my favourite parts. And this year it's been a real highlight for me to be able to work with him as the co-commentator for 30 weeks straight on a Saturday. It's him being so experienced, for me to come in there and I've learnt so much off him and how he does stuff. So it's been really, really good to do that this year. It's something that I've really, really enjoyed.
I'm not just saying this just to pee in your pocket, but the fact that you're able to just lift and match his energy has been one of the real things that I've taken out of your work this year in that co-commentary role, is that you have done something that not a lot of people do when they get into that role. And that's, like I said, it's not only matching the energy, but it's also getting into the rhythm and the flow of the game. So if there needs to be serious and discussion or analysis, you're there. If you need to go up to the excitement, you're also there. But also, games, they're not always entertaining, and there can be low points, but you also are able to sort of get to that quirky or entertainment bit and then move on. It seems to come quite naturally.
Yeah, I think it's just experience, and then learning off guys like Andrew and Matt. You know, I've learned a heap off Matt in the way he analyzes stuff as well. You know, he's a smart guy, and he's been around footy for a long time as well. So, you know, learning off those guys, for sure, but you have to put your own mix on it. That's the reason you're there. So hopefully I still hang on to enough of my own sort of personality, and you want to get that across to people occasionally as well, that what you like, but also that you do have some sort of idea about what's happened actually unfolding on the footy field.
Let's get to Matt Elliott. Andrew Moore described him as being pleasantly weird. How would you describe Matt Elliott? Because for a guy that was a serious first grade coach, working with him for the last sort of 18 months, he's a different cat, isn't he?
He is. He's a quirky human, but he's funny. He's good to be around. He's good company. He's super smart. You know, and I've been lucky enough to do a couple of things in his workspace away from the commentary as well, and just watching him, how he goes about that. But, you know, he's a super smart guy, and not just in a footy sense. He's a funny guy. He's a loving family man as well. I really like his company. He's a little bit different than what I expected before I met him. But
what were you expecting?
Well, I guess just dealing with some coaches over the years, they're pretty serious kind of chaps, you know. And I knew that he'd had that serious side of him too. I just didn't expect him to have all of the other quirky weirdness that comes with it as well. So
it seems to appeal to your quirky weirdness side of personality as well.
I guess he brings out the best of me in that sense.
You're not easily led, no?
Nah, not at all.
It also probably aligns with what you do, the other part of work that you do with NRL welfare and education, in the fact that Matt is a huge advocate for players, for well-being and for all of those those things that I guess on the mental side of things for players as well, having experienced it for such a long time as both a player and a coach. So you're very much aligned in that sense as well.
Yeah, he's got a big passion in that space too, the whole well-being space, and not just in the sporting world. He's doing some great stuff away from that as well. So, you know, I guess we've got that in common, and you know, he's a caring person. So that's why he's so passionate about that space. And like you said, we're probably on the same page in that sense as well.
What does he bring to it from a commentary point of view?
Oh, look, you know, his analysis from being a coach, as I said, I've learned a heap of him in that sense. You know, he's been an NRL coach for years and years and years, and to have that aspect of what he brings to that is huge. And he's funny. So when we do those pre-game shows, when we do all that stuff, he's dead set. He's funny. And my number one thing is that he just gets under Maury's skin. So he has that ability just to frustrate him. So I just love watching that unfold, and I get to just jump on every way I want to go.
He also gave you your alternate nickname, Boxy, which has kind of taken off a little bit.
He's given me a few, but the best was when he said that. He was just looked at me flatly, and it was like there was nothing else in his head, and it was just Boxy.
And no one had ever called you Boxy previously.
No, that was the first one, but it has got some legs.
All right, let's talk about a former teammate of yours now, made his commentary sort of debut this year with ABC Grandstand, and that's Gene Halitau. He's taken to it quite well, and he's had to do both roles like you've had to do throughout the season at varying stages. So how do you think, like, Dean's adapted to life after football, particularly given the fact that he retired last year and he's just fitted into the team so well? And I'll say this about him. He may be the world's nicest human.
Oh, yeah, he's a fantastic guy. You know, lucky enough to play alongside him and against him for a long time as well. But what a great addition to the team he's been this year. You know, I wasn't sure how he was going to be able to handle it because, you know, I worked pretty closely with Dean at work, but also his transition into life after footy as well. So I was a little bit worried that he was going to take on a little bit too much for this year for his own point of view and his family, just that, you know, hopefully he didn't burn out. But he's flown through it. He's done a great job, and his insights, it's been really enjoyable being able to work with him as well in the commentary box this year, you know. And he's jumped in on a lot of Saturdays, and I think it's been a really good mix as well too, him being down on that sideline, and, you know, we're comfortable with each other. So he's done a fantastic job, and he's, you know, hopefully he's around for a long time.
You would have seen, and you would have, I guess, dealt with similar situations just a couple of years ahead. So you perhaps would have been able to give him an insight into the expectation required, and I guess made the transition a whole lot easier for him in the fact that you'd gone through it yourself, you know, only a couple of years beforehand.
Yeah, we've caught up pretty regularly, even over the years, in the last couple of years leading up. You know, him sort of toying with the thought of what to do post-footy, when to finish, and even into it now. And he's had a fantastic footy career, and he's really slipped in nicely working at the NRL. He's moved into a full-time role there as well, and also the ABC. So I guess we're on similar paths in that sense, and it's been really good to see. You know, he's got a young family as well, and he's a real loyal family man as well. So it's good to see him going so well.
Your introduction into radio commentary came alongside Craig Hamilton, who's been a well-known voice on ABC, particularly in the Newcastle region as we sit here at Merriweather today. What's it been like working with somebody like Hammo?
Look, Hammo's excellent. I love his energy. He's a real it's funny working with Hammo because he grabs you and slaps you on the back and sort of pushes you around, and he gets into the thick of it, you know. As you said, he's been on the radio, and a lot of people know him for his sporting ability up this way as well. So just a good guy, and I really love working alongside him as well. And you know, he's different to sense him when Andrew calls, in that that Hamo is a bit more, he's pretty calm, you know, heading in, but he's really good to work alongside, but he rides the emotion, pushing you and shoving you around. It's funny to work alongside him.
Someone else you had to work alongside this year is Ruan Sims, who was also another addition to the team this year, the Gillaroos captain, and obviously has some strong family ties throughout the NRL. I'm not going to say that I'm completely surprised that she's been able to do what she's been able to do with the commentary this year, but what I will say is that just the level of intelligence and the level of what she brings to the table, it has been a real refreshing thing for the Saturday coverage, and the way that she's handled the pre- and post-game shows as well, I've been really impressed with.
Well, I still remember the first day she worked with us, actually, and in the last couple of years, it's been Matt, myself and Andrew doing a lot of those Saturdays and Sundays and a lot of that pre-game stuff. So the first one coming in this year was going to be very different, and we're at Cogra for her first game, and the weather was horrendous, but even pre-game, she just slipped straight in, jumped into stuff, interviews and stuff. She was impressive.
Just fearless, not taking a backward step in terms of just offering up an opinion, which is quite rare for somebody to step into that environment when they've never really done it before.
Yeah, she just, from that day on, she just hasn't looked back. I think she came in really confident and she backed her ability and she hasn't looked back.
You know, sometimes I think that just having that different opinion on things can be really quite enlightening.
Yeah, it's been good, and I guess you just need to go to the feedback, and the listeners out there really love what she's brought to the table this year, so she's done some fantastic stuff this year.
And what do you say about Ralph Tucker? What does he bring to the table?
Ralph, he really brings, talk about quirkiness. There's some quirky behaviour there.
Yeah.
But, look, professionalism is almost inspiring just to be around.
Oh, I'll take that on as a compliment. I like to think that I've got my fingers in a few pies, but I think you've got me covered. Like, you strike me as the type of bloke that would, and I guess I'd sort of put myself in a similar sort of basket, is that somebody asks you to do something, you say yes, and you work out how it'll all fit in later on. Is that pretty much how you do it?
It's funny you should say that, because currently I'm actually working out how I'm going to try and, this coaching appointment that I'm supposed to be involved in the next 6 months, I'm trying to work out how I'm going to achieve that. So, yeah, I do have the ability to say yes pretty often.
So what is it that you do? So you're NRL Welfare and Education.
Yeah.
You've got your own business. You're also doing the stuff for ABC. You do television work for Fox Sports. There's also, am I missing anything out here? I mean, you're a father of four.
Father of four. I was the Italian media manager for the World Cup, doing some commentary for the Women's and Men's World Cup for Channel 7.
This is charity work as well that you,
yeah,
that you do.
Yeah, I've been coaching the CRL under-16s the last couple of years, but I couldn't do it this year. I was in with the Country 23s team for a few weeks this year. Was in with the Country senior team for this Country v City match the last few years. I think we're getting close to that being about it, I think.
How do you go about fitting everything in? And what makes it that you just want to help out in every situation?
Oh, look, I'm probably a jack of all trades, master of none, I suppose. I don't know. It's just, to be brutally honest, the first few years of doing stuff, I was trying to work out what I was going to be good at and work out what the path might look like. 6 years in, I'm still trying to work all that out, what I'm good at and what the future might look like. So 2018 is definitely going to be a year where something's got to go. So we'll see what happens.
What is that like from a player's mindset? And I touched on this with Dean, and you would do this quite regularly in your work with the NRL. Coming from that structured lifestyle that you live as an NRL player to then going from that to then being left to your own devices, just give us your own personal story and what it was like for you to you know, hang up the boots and then go, Jesus, what am I going to do now?
Well, straight away, the first thing I did was I wanted to lock away a full-time job because I wanted that structure straight away. So November 1, when all my teammates were going back to train again, I was going in to start my full-time job, and that was the first thing that I wanted to get sorted. And I guess the number one priority was trying to still be around the game. You know, everyone wants to still try and get a role and be around footy, but I was lucky enough the NRL gave me an opportunity to do that straight away out of footy. Then the next thing is you want to be doing something. You want to try and honestly find something that you're passionate about and you're good at. And that's the biggest challenge for every footy player. But the biggest challenge is that day to day, pretty much every minute, as an elite footy player, you're getting feedback. Constant, good, bad, whatever, you're getting feedback. And that's the biggest difference, that you go into a life after football where that feedback doesn't come as often. So you're just rolling along and you just assume that you're doing things okay. And then you just keep doing it. And so for me, I found a role that I'm really passionate about, where I get to help hopefully young country kids in rep footy, that to prepare them if they want to chase a dream of being an NRL player or just being a good person and being a leader in their own community. Or and then working with the guys at the other end of the scale, the Dean Hallettowers of the world, heading into retirement, where hopefully if I can give them one tiny little bit of thing, assistance to help them have a smooth transition, well, that's a win for me, and it's something that I'm passionate about. So, and you know, all of those other little things that I've thrown into my life that I am passionate about, where I get to do a bit of coaching and I get to be around people and do all that stuff. It's, yeah, I'm pretty lucky.
One of the things that Dean mentioned, and I sort of said it to him as well, that really sort of resonated with me just in terms of just that transition from being a footy player, is just as simple as you don't have everything look after for you. So healthcare drops away, you've got to look after that. You know, you're massive, in some cases, drop in income. So you kind of got to adjust to life because, you know, your mortgage is still going to be the same price. Something as simple as not being issued with free clothing and free shoes and boots and all of that kind of stuff that you just probably take for granted as an NRL player. Is that something that you try to get across to the players that are moving into that next phase of their life, that after being so structured and being, not pampered, but being well looked after by clubs?
Yeah, big time. And the other part of it is, when you're a footy player, you think you're busy, or some people think they're busy, you don't have any time, but in most cases, guys are home by 2 or 3 o'clock in the arvo on a lot of days. You know, your weekends and the pressure and the pre-season and what that comes with it, but you get that opportunity to hang out with your kids most afternoons, really. And as everyone knows in the real world, that reality is you may not get to do that. You may not get to see them either in the morning or at night. And again, it's, you're hanging out with 25 of your best mates every day and getting fit and healthy, and then going into something after footy that you're so used to doing that, you've obviously got to try and get fit and healthy out of hours, out of work hours as well. And you don't have your best mates that are in the same mindset as you around the work environment all the time. So that's why it's crucial for us to have that network of guys to chat to bounce things off, to get a bit of a feeling of what it might be going into that phase.
What's it like, even as simple as that, knowing that, okay, you're not going to train 6 hours a day? Like, how do you then maintain? You obviously, some guys just let it fall away because it may be a decade or more of that intense physical training day in, day out, that they just want a break from it. But then with that comes we've discovered in recent times, and the research is out there, that having that reliance on fitness and health and exercise actually affects how you deal with things mentally. So what was that like for you, just sort of thinking, well, now I've only got an exercise perhaps with a full-time job of maybe a 2-hour window a day, or even, you know, if you put it off for a couple of days, you then got to sort of go back, and that base that you've built up as an athlete can kind of be eroded fairly quickly.
Yeah, and the other challenge, I guess, is that you don't want to be cutting into your family time too. So I've sort of been able to work out a balance where I try and get up super early if I'm going to go train, and if I am at home through the week, I want to be at home with the kids in the morning if I can for at least an hour or so. So if I'm going to try and train, I try and knock it over while they're sleeping and get that done. But you're spot on. That's a big part of what we're trying to do in this space too, get guys back training together and building that network again, because one of the first things that guys say they can't wait is to stop doing as much training. But in reality, it's healthy for them. It keeps them fresh mentally to continue to train and to feel good, and you sleep better, you're doing everything, all of that as well. So it's a big part for those guys post-footy as well.
Just in terms of the adjustment that you're trying to deal with players, like I said before, a lot of them may cover a role in the media that you do, but realistically, the games only happen on the weekend, so it's only going to be a small part of the week. Mm. Just getting them to find what they're passionate about. How early are you looking to get to players in terms of having those discussions with them? Because in some cases, you may be on decent money, but it only takes really in some instances one serious injury, and then a career can be pretty much over.
For sure. So I've got two full-time career coaches that work with me, and they work with the guys 28 and above until 5 years into retirement. So pretty much from that 28 and above, they're meeting with them one-on-one, and we're picking their brains about what they want to do for life after football. But like you said, there's only a very small percentage of jobs or opportunities that guys get to go into. And probably the biggest challenge getting across to them is that how many transferable skills they've got. A lot of them don't have the confidence and belief that they're good at anything else because they're just a footy player. And I don't know how many over the years we've heard, and I would have said it myself, that I'm just a footy player, I don't know what else I can offer. But what they've been doing, and Matty Elliott's the biggest advocate for this, some of these guys have been doing it for 10 or 12 years. Your time management, you're working as part of a team, a lot of qualities that take feedback, give feedback. A lot of business people want those types of people in the environment, you know, self-motivated. So many things that these guys just do naturally or from being in those environments that they've learned, that they thrive. Once they get an opportunity in any different space, they thrive because they actually think it's going to be a lot harder in some senses than what it is. It's the expectations they put on themselves that they think that they're not going to be good at anything.
Well, Matty's often described it as a career in the NRL as pretty much an equivalent to doing a PhD.
He has.
And when he first sort of threw that line out there, I didn't dismiss it, but it got me to thinking about it, and it's so true, like just in terms of what the athletes learn about nutrition and health and exercise and what you mentioned there about teamwork and leadership, and there's just so many transferable skills that your NRL player can do. And what I guess another major point as well that is quite often overlooked is that, you know, these guys are doing interviews from when they're aged 18 and above. Mm. And that public speaking component is a huge thing in the modern workplace. If you're able to present in front of, you know, your peers and you're able to communicate it well, that's going to stand you in good stead in any working environment, because it's not something that people find easy to do, regardless of what workplace they're in. So these NRL guys that have got this background and training, and like you said, the time management, the skills for an attractive employee, despite the fact that they may be 10 or 15 years behind the people that they went to school with, they've got the skills that can allow them to adapt.
Yeah, look, it might take a couple of years, but once they find their feet, they do thrive. You know, I still want the guys though to be thinking about some sort of education or work experience or something while they're playing, because it's actually good for their footy. It takes their mind off just being in that insular footy environment as well. So, and it also shows employers later on that you've had that thought process of trying to better yourself and trying to have a crack at something else while you're playing footy, to have a bit of an eye on that. I was probably a guy that thought too much about post-footy. I was constantly worried
when did you...
Oh, probably 19, I started thinking about it.
No.
Well, I started an apprenticeship as a young guy, and I was never destined to be an NRL player. So for me, making NRL was a big bonus. So I guess I always had that thought that this could be out over at any stage. So I pretty much not constantly did stuff while I was playing, but for a big chunk of my NRL career, whether it be in going to TAFE to do a Cert 4 in marketing, or going to uni later on, or doing my apprenticeship and going to TAFE, or going to do a work experience, I was sort of always, even started a business 3 or 4 years out from when I retired. It was only a small, very small business, but I probably thought about that too much. So don't take that advice on those players.
But from that point of view, looking at probably realistically or over-realistically, and just getting involved in different things, did you think that helped with your football itself?
Definitely. I stand by the years that I was actually doing something away from the field. I was playing my best footy on the field. There's no doubt in my mind I was mixing with different people. When I was going to TAFE and on a Tuesday and Thursday night with guys that had been doing 40 and 50-hour weeks, and they're still trying to better themselves at night. So for me, I was only going to footy training through that day. So I was there going...
So that's inspiring from your point of view.
Yeah, big time. Big time. And then, you know, just mixing with different people, just having different influences around you, just seeing what other people are going through, and just... gave me experience as well. And then, you know, it turns out that was the reason why the NRL came and said, look, you've been doing a fair bit while you're playing, we want you to come into the role after footy.
Can you see why it's easy for players to get sucked into that footy bubble, in the fact that, okay, they get up in the morning, they train, they have a rest, they train, they go to sleep, they play footy, and then that's their entire focus? Can you see why it's that easy for guys to get sucked into that?
For sure. And you look, you're dead set. That's why senior players at clubs are so important, and people that you surround yourself with at the club, and who you watch, what habits you take as a young guy. You know, when I first came into first grade, I had guys like Nathan Kalis, who was, you know, my age, but he was laying the platform for us. He was prepared. He was training. Then we had guys like Gary Larson, who, you know, been around the NRL. Brian Smith brought him over to show a lot of us young guys about training and preparation. And so you get influenced by the people around you and what they're doing day to day. So if you're watching the wrong things, if you're doing the wrong things from some players, and whether that being going out or making poor choices away from the field, well, your footy and your life suffers. But if you pick up what some of the positive influences the clubs are doing, you can really do some great things.
Can you sort of see why some players fall into the trap of that whole pressure scenario? Like, it's intense now, especially more so these days with social media, and there's the distractions that perhaps you didn't have in the early days of your career that are now more evident, that players of a certain age, they've just grown up in that era of getting involved in that sort of social media side of things, which seems to be a big distraction for some players.
Yeah, you're spot on. I guess that, you know, when the going's good, it's easy for people to get on social media and get the pats on the back. But when it's not going so great, it's a tough one. You know, people are bagging you constantly. I can totally understand why people want us to stay in that bubble, or they maybe don't want to get too much outside influence, why they just want to concentrate on their footy and do that day to day. So you're not going to knock guys for that, but always just think, if you're going to have just a little bit of an eye, just something in the back of your mind, just to keep that ticking over. And the majority of guys are doing it, and unfortunately, we've seen the guys that haven't done anything since school, unfortunately, they're the ones that are making the poor choices away from the field. They're the ones in the papers for the wrong reasons. So it just helps you be a whole person.
I guess on the flip side of that also is the fact that players can create their own positive image through social media. So they're able to offer up different things. And I mean, the way things are growing with Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and things like that is that they can be promoting themselves, their own brand, their own image that, you know, not only sponsors may get involved with, but corporate people may also be taking notice of what they're doing in that space. So it gives them an opportunity to, I guess, showcase their talents that are outside football, if you sort of want to look at it from a positive point of view as well.
Oh, 100%. Look, 15 years ago, if you'd have said, not 10 years ago probably, if you'd have said, what's your personal brand look like, not one footy player would have known what you're talking about. But personal brand's a big thing, and this is what we're speaking to some of the young guys about as well. You know, I'm talking about guys at 14, 15, 16. Your personal brand at that age is your Facebook account. So already clubs are starting to look at that. Potential employers down the track are looking at that. And as you go through to being an NRL player, everything that you're throwing out there is it's either good or bad. People are seeing the kind of the real person you are,
and it's been consumed by a whole lot of people out there that you can cultivate your own fan base, and it can go one of two ways. People can think you're a complete tosser, or they can think this guy's actually got his head switched on and he's going places. You know,
yeah, they can really do some fantastic things. Their community work, what they're doing in that sense as well. You can. You know, I think of a guy like a Joel Thompson, who's probably not the highest of profile players getting around, but my goodness, he does some great stuff away from the field, and the upbringing he unfortunately had as well. Like he's doing phenomenal things. So these sorts of guys are putting themselves in a great place for life after footy as well.
You've been very generous with your time, and we'll wrap things up in a sec, but just a final word on, I guess, advice to players that are looking to, I guess, follow a similar path to you and get involved in the media side of things. What would you say to somebody that's got an eye on developing their skills in that particular area?
I think to start with, if they're a current player, be open to having a chat to all media outlets. And that was...
And the media's certainly not the enemy, is it?
No,
like, it's often portrayed by, like you said, you had some fairly sort of strict sort of coaches and who sort of probably would have planted the seed that the media's just there to look to dig dirt. But ultimately, the media can raise your profile. They can do good things for you. If you stay on the right side of them, naturally, if you do the wrong things, they're going to come down on you. But if you're a clean skin, you keep your nose clean, and people often see producers or it may be media talent are often looking to refresh their stock. So the opportunity's there if you use it in the right fashion.
Are you saying you're looking to refresh our stocks?
I'm happy with the current talent base.
Spot on. Look, you don't have to do anything outrageous, but just be good to, you know, people that want to speak to you at the time, have a chat to them. And I'm talking about media outlets in that sense too, but I guess it's in the career sense, having a bit of an eye on and what it looked like. And I guess the attitude I always took as well is the game doesn't owe me anything. I owe everything to rugby league. I moved away as an 18-year-old from a guy who couldn't make my local rep side. And 20 years later, I'm still working full-time in the game. So some people feel like the game owes him something when they retire. But for me, it's given me everything, you know.
So it's being open to opportunities.
Absolutely. Yeah, being open to it. And you're going to have to work hard at it as well. Like, it doesn't just fall in your lap. You know, people, doors will open. I got told this when I was finishing up. Doors are going to open for you because you've been lucky to play NRL for a while, but you've got to be able to walk through those doors and actually bring something to it as well. And work hard to stay at it and be good at something and take the attitude like guys do in their footy career, that if you have a weakness, you go and work at it. And that might be outside of your normal hours, but if you've got a weakness, work at it. But back yourself and have the confidence to have a good crack at something post-footy.
Andrew Ryan, thanks very much for your time.
Ralph Tucker, thanks very much for your time.
You idiot.
There he is, Andrew Bobcat Boxy Ryan. And as you've heard, he's got a few fingers in a few pies all over the joint. If you really enjoyed my chat today with Bobcat, you can send him a tweet. He's at Bobcat_Ryan. You can also send us a tweet, which is at MediaMatesAU. Check out the Facebook page. You can also go along to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or review. That really helps other people find the show. Until next time, I'm Ralph Tucker, and this has been the Media Mates Podcast. Media Mates Podcast.